Hello and welcome back to What Do You Know For Sure podcast with me, Anne Hughes. And in this week's episode, I was joined by Elisa Di Napoli, who is joining me from New Zealand. And we were chatting about the fact she believes that we create our own reality. So this was a real chat about your beliefs, about your experiences, about how we reinforce them. Really interesting one that I hope you enjoy. Elisa, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, and you're joining me all the way from New Zealand, so that makes the world feel smaller, doesn't it? But tell us a bit about you.
I am a artist, singer, songwriter, writer, but I'm also a therapist and a life coach. So I kind of, these are my roles in life anyway, you know, combine these two disciplines. I'm very passionate about personal development and also creativity and understanding ourselves, and also using using the arts as in a therapeutic kind of way. So that's basically me. Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, perfect. Now, I know you've been thinking about this because you got in touch to come on the podcast. So tell me, Elisa, what do you know for sure?
We create our own reality. That's what I know for sure. And by that, I mean that we create our own story and our interpretation of events and our own our own character, in the sense of, you know, who we are. And that's based on our beliefs. And those beliefs are also based on early experiences. Then we reinforce the beliefs that we have acquired through experience. But that cycle is biased, because if we have good experiences, then sure, we have positive beliefs about ourselves. But if we are unlucky and we don't, then what can happen is that we are stuck in a cycle of negative reinforcement. Mm-hmm. This, of course, doesn't mean that, it doesn't take away from, you know, the circumstances that we might be in. You know, maybe we're unlucky, we were born in an abusive family or a poor country or whatever, you know, those things are real. But on the other hand, what we do with that, that is our responsibility, especially as adults, because as kids, we don't have the tools, really.
So how long have you sort of been aware that you sit in a place where you're creating your own reality? How long has that been something that you're aware of?
It's been like that for many, many years, but it's one thing to know it for sure in terms of cognition, if you like, you know, it's a thought. And one thing is to apply that, you know, another thing is to apply it, to be able to stop yourself from the automatic pilot way of living and to go, Nope. That's the subconscious conditioning and programming, you know. I now consciously choose something else. Now it's been a lot of work, and it keeps being a lot of work. Yeah, so that's more of a recent development that I've been able to recognize the programming and kind of stop it maybe 80% of the time.
Yeah. Talked about how you're creative. And, you know, you're a singer-songwriter, you're an artist, got all your musical instruments behind you there as we're chatting. How do you think it affects your own creativity when you know, right, well, I'm going to create the reality and therefore my creativity? That, does it make you feel a wee bit more in control of your creativity? I'm just interested what the dance with creativity is like if you're believing that you create it all.
You know, when you are creative, you shouldn't really try to interfere with the process at the beginning anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So at the beginning of a creative exercise, whatever it may be, if it's writing a story or a song or something else, it's about expansion, it's about freedom, it's about unconscious emergence of material. So you shouldn't really try too hard at the beginning to, you know, have a direction. You can have a general direction, a general idea of what you want, but that first stage is all about playfulness, exploration, freedom, and automatic stuff will come up. But that doesn't mean that you can't change it, because the second stage of the creativity, of a creative exercise, is to narrow down and focus on the parts that are relevant, that are, you know, that make sense. So at the end of the day, yes, you're creating a reality there too, but it's more as first a loose intention and then a elimination process.
Yeah.
And then refining again, because, you know, so you go expansion, contraction, and during the contraction phase, you're refining, editing, you know, doing all of that until you're basically happy with the result. And of course, the result is never going to be perfect, because, you know, perfection doesn't exist. But that's where the intention of creating your own reality gets in. I think the other answer is that it's about the content, you know, of the songs or writing, you know, asking yourself in moments of reflection, what am I trying to say here? You know, what is my philosophy, if you like?
Mm.
But sometimes, you know, sometimes you don't know that in a conscious way, and you have just observe and figure it out as you go.
Yeah, one of the I would say I can share some of that, and I don't know if you've ever heard of the Scottish mystic Sidney Banks. I don't know, he lived in Canada and he had an enlightenment experience, and he talks about, I mean, long gone now, but he talked about us living in a thought created reality. And so it's not what's happening, it is what I am thinking about what's happening. So I feel as if that's maybe a different step and a different further along the path of what you're talking about. So I can totally, I know for sure I live in a thought created reality.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is that, you know, there's the data, there's the external circumstances, but your mind always acts as a filter, you know, and the thoughts are your interpretation of the reality, and that will create a specific feeling, and that will create a specific reaction in the body. We're really talking about, you know, from therapy point of view, cognitive behavior therapy, this is what it's all about, right? Because you can interrupt the cycle, you know, it starts with the circumstances, the data, the external, then it goes into the internal mind, thought, interpretation, story, then the feeling, then the body reaction. But then the body reaction also creates more thoughts, you know, because then, you start interpreting that as well. So if you're lucky, it becomes a nice, positive, self-reinforcing cycle. But if you started with something, you know, that was painful, for example, and you create an interpretation that is really negative and damaging to yourself, then you're stuck in this negative cycle.
And as you think about how you move through life, because, you know, you've got a lot of living life to do, how do you think that you feel about your life and you feel about your future, given that you know that you're going to create your own reality? Does that make you feel better, more powerful, more at peace? I mean, it could make you feel a lot of things, couldn't it?
That's a great question. Well, on one hand, it's kind of, you know, it's basically about taking responsibility, right? So on one hand, it's empowering.
Yeah.
On the other, you know, it takes away the kind of passive victimhood in terms of, you know, like mindset. Like you basically can no longer say, oh, well, you know, there's, it just happened. Things are just happened. Bad things just happened to me and it's not my fault. And, you know, this is not, of course, about fault, because it's not your fault if you, you know, someone assaults you or you lose your whatever, you know, your job or whatever it is. But how you respond is your responsibility. So to me, if you're willing to let go of that kind of victim mentality, then it is empowering. Although, you know, it is also not a burden. I don't want to say it's a burden, but it's a responsibility, you know, like you need, I need many, many times, I need to go back, get back onto, okay, well, what is my responsibility here, you know?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, basically, you're like someone on a very small raft in the middle of the ocean being blown about by the winds and then saying, oh, well, you know, there was a storm and that's why A, B, and C happened. It's like, yeah, but at the same time, you've just allowed yourself to be a complete passive victim of whatever happens around you.
Fascinating, fascinating. When you were talking there, I was thinking about that quote that you read about the bird sitting on a branch doesn't worry if the branch is going to break, because its confidence comes for the fact that it trusts itself that it won't fall if the branch breaks. And I think that's probably how most things that I approach, I think, well, I'll be able to cope with that when I get there. I'll be able to do what has to be done. I'll meet the right people. I'll go on the right path. But I do also add to that, I'm an incredibly positive person, and I know everybody's not like that. So when in your work, because you mentioned that you do some coaching and things, in your work, do you find that that is easier for some people than it is for others?
To an extent that, of course, some people might be very, more anxious than other people. But I think what's important is to understand ourselves. All of us have anxiety from time to time. All of us suffer from, we have fear. That's what allows us to be alive. And if we didn't, if we're not afraid, if we weren't afraid, or if we didn't have any anxiety, we wouldn't build houses and bridges and towns and all the things we've done. It's all about anxiety and wanting to feel safe. So that's, universal. But some people kind of have that more on steroids. It's kind of like constantly up there. And in that case, we have to look at what the causes of that are, because they could be partly genetic, but partly to do with, what happened to to them. So yes, it's possible though to intervene, even if you are quite an anxious person, and change your mindset. I used to be in my 20s, I was very anxious. And it's not like, my anxiety's gone away completely, but I'm much less anxious than I ever used to be. I couldn't have interviews. I couldn't, I remember once when I was 24 and I was asked to give a lecture and I was terrified and I spoke so fast that I think nobody was able to understand anything I said, And now it's really easy and I enjoy it, But that's because I've learned that there's different ways of approaching and thinking about, in this case, interviews or whatever it may be.
Perfect. Perfect. Thank you so much, Elisa, for joining me on the podcast.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on this episode of What Do You Know For Sure podcast. If you would like to connect with me, you can do that across social media by searching Anne Hughes Ignite. If I refer to my radio show and the podcast, you can catch those on my Mixcloud. Again, just searching Anne Hughes Ignite. And if you or anybody you know want to answer this question with me, please do get in touch. Just go onto my website, annehughesignite.co.uk, and fill in the contact page at the bottom, and I'll be delighted to have this conversation with you too. Thank you.